He blew under the legal limit, you dipshitted coos doomon. As I said, his lawyer will waste no more than one legal hour with this case, you fucklick. Leave it to Dumon to fog up a story. Stick to selling toilets and sinks at Loa's. Leave the legal biz to Kazen, his dad, and Johnny Cochran. Now go back to Dogman and share your Inquirer bullshit.
Another one! Alright, we the best. I'm out.
With Hitler. The more I learn about that guy, the more I don't care for him.
Maybe I could be like an announcer, like a color man. You know how I always make those interesting comments during the game?
Yeah, you make good comments.
The weather is perfect, the field is fast at the Rose Bowl for tonight's ball game.
In years past, it has been Oktoberfest, and where Coop and I would get together once a year for a recording on our podcast here. And this year, it slides into December, so it's the December cast. And Coop, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing absolutely swell. I'm doing fantastic, actually. Swell isn't swollen, but because I'm old and things get swollen now. I'm doing really good, brother. I'm staying really busy. I'm fat and happy, and that's literally in both cases.
And talking from Starlink.
Talking from Starlink. Yeah, I got Starlink. I don't know. I got Starlink about 6 months ago because I live in the boonies up in the Lewis County, Thurston County border, and I was getting literally, like, on a good day, like 1 megabyte per second download and an average, like, 4 megabytes per second. And when you're on the internet constantly, either in school or podcast, it was awful. So I sprung for Starlink. Absolutely no regrets. I think I told you before, you know, if I was pansexual, I'd be hitting on Elon Musk. That's how much I love that guy. I would vote for him for Universe Commander at this point. But no, Starlink is fantastic. I'm pulling down 200 megabytes per second, and it's well worth the money. It's changed my life. Porn
looks
great.
A night of ecstasy with Elon Musk or with Kalen DeBoer, which are you going? You can't have both.
Oh, I can't have them both? I can't make just a man sandwich out of that? Damn it. Right now, I'd go with Kalen DeBoer because we kind of look alike, and we, like, if we could have, like, since this is an impossible scenario, if we have a child together, it would be, like, the most, like, king of the Viking child ever.
Two men can have a baby. What are you talking about?
Here, let me put this out there. This is really controversial. No, they can't.
What?
For more, tune into my podcast, Two Grumpy Bastards. That's right. I'll be shamelessly plugging that a couple times as we go through.
Because you're Phyllis Diller and Russ is Margot Robbie.
Whoa, it's the other way around. Hey, have you ever watched... I'm sorry. Have you watched yes, this is my soft and gentle side out there. By the way, in case people don't know who I am, this is Coop Dog, aka the Sweatpants General.
Yes.
On the boards. This is my soft and gentle side, but have you ever watched the Harry Potter movies?
Okay, here we go. You know what? I said to myself, you know, you should really try to watch these, and I watched the first movie for about 15 to 17 minutes, and I said, I can't do this anymore, and I stopped. So.
I want you to know that I've been through the entire series twice. And I'm not ashamed of it, but also if you...
It wasn't vanity. It wasn't like, God, I can't be watching this. It was just like, this is so stupid, I can't.
I got you. You either like it or you don't. It's okay. But anyway, never mind then, because the reference would be completely lost on you. So I'm not even going to go down that road. But the physical differences between Russ and I, and we served together, of course, were always a a bone of contention. I remember one time, and Russ is a tough guy. I mean, 101st Airborne, Army Ranger, the whole nine yards. So no arguing that he's tough, but he's a vertically challenged, not exactly Adonis bodied, and he would agree to all this. I mean, he, when we tell stories on the pod, he talks about his chess team exploits, which is amazing. That's what I love about the guy. He's got integrity. The guy went from that to become a badass Army Ranger. But anyway, I used to say, you know what? You know what? And he always physically fit as far as his PT test and all that. Of course, he's got 3-inch arms, so he could knock out 200 push-ups, no problem. If I did it, my fucking mantis arms, that actually meant something. But I once said, you know, the classic retort, I go, you really need to get in shape, man. You look like shit in your uniform. He goes, I am in shape. Round the fucking shape. So,
did you ever see Hunting Hitler?
No, I did not.
Oh, you should have. Yeah, you got to go watch that series, but it's a few years old now. But Tim Kennedy and his buddy, and I'm forgetting the guy's name, about him, but he was an Army Ranger and a doctor. And when you compare those two physically, they're both in tremendous shape. But Tim Kennedy's like, you know, former MMA, and he's a specimen. And then the doctor guy, and I'm forgetting his name, but he was in good shape, but he was like 5'6" and, you know, 170 or whatever. So when you'd see the two of them stand together, it was quite a dichotomy in regards to height and build and everything. But
it happens. People have that prototypical idea what it's supposed to look like, and it's really not like that. I was always one of the bigger dudes, you know, always one of the bigger dudes. And I can tell you the bad thing about that is, like, everybody uses the same size parachute. So that sucks for guys like me.
Speaking of bigger dudes, how about Kalen DeBoer and his 13-0 Washington Huskies?
Look, I could not be any more happy with, you know, last year, I, you know, I was like, is this a fluke? Is this kind of like, is this getting over Jimmy Lake fever and, you know, the positivity that he brings and stuff? But I, you know, a lot of close games, a lot of excitement with this new quarterback and stuff. And then this year, just fucking win, man. He exemplifies everything I want to see in a man and a leader to me. Yeah, I could not be any more in love with a coach. I'm just, and you know what? This might sound a little sappy, but I'm happy for him. I'm happy for him. I see how much joy he takes in the process, and how much he truly, truly loves his kids. And I don't know. It was like some of the leaders I had in the Army coming up as a young officer, and I was fortunate to have a lot of good leaders that, you know, I learned from, a lot of good mentors, and I felt that as I went through the service and, you know, got a little bit more rank and experience and bigger units to take care of and stuff. It's that there's nothing, you know, aside from being a parent, I imagine, that gives you that type of joy. And that's what I see in him. And you see, you know, the Urban Meyers and the Steve Spurriers of the world, who look like they're just like chomping on a fucking, you know, turd that came out of a Thailand hooker's, you know what, the entire time they're on a sideline. And it's just like, they look miserable. You know, they look like miserable human beings, and I'm just like, God, that's supposed to be fun. And I love a guy that has that, and he's got so many leadership qualities. I've watched all of his pressers. I've seen a lot of behind the scenes interviews and stuff like that. And I think he's really that guy. I think he's that guy that gives those sideline interviews to that, that blonde Oompa Loompa chick that does all the interviews. Can't remember her name, but, and she's just horrible. She looks like one of my mom, my dear late mother's Lewis County hairdressers. She really does.
I feel bad for her, because she knows full well that she's being commented on by millions of people when she's standing there. And
I know.
I
think she's shitty at her job, though, too, I got to admit. But anyway, besides her looks. But no, I think he's that guy, Derek. I really do. I think he's the genuine article, and I could not be any happier for him and the boys that play for him and this team. And it's just been really, really exciting this year.
Here's the thing: aside from the, you know, the wins, loss, because obviously if he's like 6-7 right now or something, that we you know, or he wouldn't be that far, but he'd be 6-6. But we'd be focused on, hey, we need more wins. But you get the wins, but then you can also then appreciate all the other good stuff and the other good qualities. And it's kind of like whenever there's some misbehavior going on with certain players, which is always inevitable, no matter how good of a coach and program you have. And it doesn't like veer off into these huge scandals and a lot of stuff in the media and everything. It just seems to get quietly taken care of behind the scenes. And I don't think that's because he's, you know, like, when Tyrone was here, Willingham, you know, everybody, the media was always afraid to ask him any pointed type of question about things that were going on. And that's not the case here. It's just such a tight ship. When Washington beat when they beat Oregon for the Pac-12 championship, and then I'm sure you noticed there was no watch viewing party for the team to see whether or not they got selected and where and all that. They didn't do that. And I like that. I like that quiet expectation of, you know, you expect to be there and you don't have to. You remember when the Husky basketball team was the number one seed?
Yeah, absolutely I do. Yeah.
And it's not that I like say, oh, you know, the viewing party was retarded. They shouldn't have done it. But it was like, you could know nothing about the Husky basketball history and to just watch that and watch their over the top reaction and go, okay, there's a program that hasn't done very much. And then they underachieved in the tournament, you know? And, that's immediately what my mind went to when I heard that there was going to be no viewing party for the current Husky football team in regards to the playoff thing. And even that tweet from the other day where DeBoer was publicly congratulating Penix for finishing second in the Heisman and all the great qualities and attributes that he possesses as a human being and a leader for Washington. And then he's like, you know, now it's time to get back to work to finish the journey. You know what I mean? It was like, and so you said a couple minutes ago about how you're really happy for this guy because he seems like a genuine good guy on top of being a great coach. And so that's the antithesis of like, whenever you would see the I don't know whether to call it gaslighting or not, but when Sark was here, and even to an extent when Peterson was here, the media would project one thing, but it wasn't the reality. And then and I always go, Sark was not a good guy. I didn't want to see him succeed because I didn't feel like he deserved it. And
I hear you.
So it's the antithesis.
Yep.
But DeBoer, you go, there's a guy, you want him to succeed. When they do the cheesy mic'd up on the sideline before the game type of thing, but you see, I've seen multiple times where he's like walking down the line while the players are stretching and then and the player will like do a little high five thing and then they'll go, I love you, coach. Heard that multiple times. That's not like orchestrated or whatever. That's genuine. And it's like,
Yeah. Boy,
he's got something good going on there in terms of culture. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You can tell the coaches, the players love him, and that's the big thing. And I don't know. I think it's interesting. Like I said, I watched the pressers and watching, you know, he always has Ryan Grubb and I don't know how to pronounce the gentleman's name. William Inge, the assistant head coach, defensive coordinator guy?
No, Inge, yeah.
Okay. I had never known how to pronounce that. But I don't know. There's something to be said about people who are open and honest and have a good sense of humor and all of that. Although the two minor gripes that I do have with Kalen DeBoer, and they're pretty minor compared to what I'm seeing. And when you have a team that's tough and hanging in there at the end and, you know, has to come from behind at the end or stuff like that, it's fucking coaching, you know, and all these people online that, oh, Texas, look at all their 4- and 5-star recruits compared to Washington. Yeah, it's called coaching. Okay. It's called coaching. And I think that's the difference between this team and, you know, the heart attacks they give. And I got to tell you, I have not had fun watching them in the last half of the season. I've been stressed the hell out almost every single game. I mean, it's been, you know, and I was over at my gal's house for a couple of these games. I got her hooked, by the way. And you know, it was just, it was crazy how I just stressed the entire time where, you know, the first half of the season, it was like, you know, but that's coaching, baby. And I'm not sure. Couple of things. I just to take a quick segue into the coaching realm. The one thing I was going to say is the amount of penalties does concern me. the number of penalties this team cooks up. I mean, it's one of the most penalized teams in all of college football. Correct. I haven't quite wrapped my head around that one, where that's coming from, because I don't see a lack of discipline at all on, you know, the sidelines or these coaches. I'm not sure. I don't know a whole lot about I haven't looked at William Inge's background. Some of the stuff I've seen on defense has really, really concerned me. But, my God, the way they stepped up, especially in the first, you know, the three quarters against Oregon was brilliant. They beat Russ and I on the Two Grumpy Bastards podcast. Last night we were talking about this. And yeah, I did not expect Washington. I mean, I expected them to win, unlike other people. But they came out and they won the fist fight all over the field. That was really the difference. They came out ready to punch and brawl. And I saw that defense step up in a way that I was not expecting, frankly. I thought it was going to be more of a shootout. And that Pac-12 championship game, I don't think it was that close. The score was close, but we won three of those quarters handily. The third quarter sucked, but the first, second, and fourth quarter were all Huskies, in my opinion, as far as play on the field. A little concerned about the defense. And I got to tell you, however much money you need to throw at Scott Huff to keep him on the coaching staff, do it, because I have been ridiculously impressed with that offensive line all year.
Well, it would be unjust to be critical at this point. And by the way, they were a big concern the first couple of games. Like, I remember against Tulsa, we had the third and ones where we couldn't even move the pile, you know.
Right. So the way they've been looking since then, I mean, that's coaching. Yeah, they had some talented players along that line, but my God, I mean, the way they've protected, you know, a pocket quarterback, and, you know, Dylan really picking it up in the second half of the season and coming on strong as a very, very good running back, from somebody that I thought was just like, well, at the beginning of the season. So from those standpoints,
I wouldn't even say very good. I'd say he's great.
I hesitated to say that because I thought you were going to correct me and make fun of me and make me cry, but
well, since when does that stop you from saying something?
No, I didn't want to insert hyperbole, but I love that kid and I love the way he's running. Yeah, definitely.
Oh, absolutely! I absolutely love him, and I at least from, you know. You know, I'm obviously not at practice like certain people, but I just from what I could tell, he seems like he's just humble and fantastic with his teammates. And, there was that picture that was like on Instagram or Twitter or whatever, where he was posing with the offensive linemen and he was in the middle of them. And he was just like, hey, shout out to my guys on the line that made it possible or whatever. Just, you know. And he just runs so hard, just gives everything he's got. And he at contact, he automatically gets another 2 or 3 yards. And it's just the only time he fumbled, I could see it like watching a in slow motion a car collision or something. You could just see that guy coming from behind him on that long run and cover the ball. But besides that, he never fumbled this year. And it was just fantastic. And then his blocking, the way he gave up his body and the I don't know why we couldn't use the use him for protection against Arizona State when they were coming up the middle and making life miserable for Penix. But they sure had everything dialed in to, you know, you could tell from Herb Street on down, they all thought that Oregon was just gonna blitz up the middle and overwhelm us. And then when Oregon came out in that, and by the way, you know, I did not have fun the majority of the games this year because of the way they played out. But that Pac-12 championship game, even when we fell behind for a while, I had fun from beginning to end. That was a great football game, and I respected what Oregon did there, and then we beat them again, and it was great. I'm rambling, but it was great.
No, I hear you. I that Pac-12 championship game. You know, the funny thing is, I was stressed out a little bit, but I kind of wasn't, because I never thought, even when Oregon went ahead, that we were going to lose. I never actually thought that. I was worried in a couple of the other games prior to that, but I'm like, the Kalen DeBoer, you know, mantra, we're built for this. They kind of proved it over the course of the season to me that they were. And I love that we beat Oregon twice. And Oregon is a great team. They're not just a good team. They're a great football team. And Bo Nix is the real deal, man. I mean, you know, if I was a fan of the NFL anymore, which I'm kind of not, draft his ass. I would love to see him on the field for my team. You know, he's a great quarterback. So, I don't know. I kind of gained a little bit more respect and like for Oregon this year watching them play. I don't know. I don't have as much hatred in my heart as I used to for Oregon.
Which is easy to say when you beat them three times in a row and not lose 12 times in a row.
I was wondering if you were going to pick up on that, because otherwise they could lick my fucking ass.
I'm sure we can go back to like 2021 and there's a Coop Dog post on there somewhere where you're telling Mutson to lick your ass, or SFG Bob or somebody. But
Knob on my little
German. What's that?
I said knob on my little German bratwurst, motherfuckers. Yes, I probably would have said something.
But no, a couple things. One, to say whether or not they're very good or great, in a way, I chuckled heartily as much as anybody when I heard they were going to be playing Liberty, for God's sake. But it's kind of too bad.
That's my kind of tool that I'm attending.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Yeah, my flame on.
But I, in a way, it's too bad that they can't go up against a Penn State or somebody where you could really get a final reading on that team in terms of whether to label them great or not, because they're going to blow out Liberty. And even if they only win by 14 or whatever, they don't really prove anything with that. And then they finish 12-2. Now, of course, both their losses are to us, and the season's always marred in their minds because they lost to us twice. So I love that, of course. But from that standpoint, Oregon will never really know the level that they're at in that regard. But second of all, how many quarterbacks in Bo Nix's position would be playing this Fiesta Bowl against Liberty? Most of them would be sitting out. They wouldn't want to risk
point.
And for him to be getting out there one more time with his brothers, I really like that.
I do, too. Russ and I talked about this a couple of podcasts ago. I really have a problem.
I'm sorry, what was the name of the podcast again?
Oh, it's the Two Grumpy Bastards podcast. There you go.
Available on Apple and Spotify. Go ahead.
Available everywhere where podcasts are available. we were talking about this because he's like, well, I understand. I get it. I'm like, you know what? If you sign a contract to play for a team in college football, there should be a rule about you sitting that shit out. I think that is the most pussy, motherfucking, cowardly way to disrespect your team and your brothers on that team. I hate it. I don't think it should be allowed. That's just me. It's like, well, somebody could get hurt before. Fuck, dude, they just played 100 college football, or whatever, 50 college football games in their career. One more. You know, well, I hate it. I hate it.
There's I don't know if we want to get in the weeds on this, but there's no way you could realistically enforce that, because you could just pretend to have an injury or whatever. So.
That's exactly what I said, too. And me having libertarian tendencies, I don't like to overregulate things. But it's just, I will say this.
Libertarian in all things except college football.
Except college football. Demand the shit out of stuff and kill them if they don't. No. No, and of course, I do believe in foreign interventional things, unlike a lot of libertarians. Don't let it come to our borders. But we won't talk about that right now. But, no, I just think it's cowardly. I do. I think it's disloyal and cowardly. I hate it. And I'm firm in that. So,
Be that
as it may.
Because, let's say you're an unheralded left guard that you've been blocking for that guy, for your quarterback all season long, and now suddenly you're playing in the XYZ Bowl and you're suddenly blocking for the backup or whatever, just because the other guy deemed himself too important to be there. And I don't like that. Just like with Caleb Williams, you know, most people would probably argue with me to say, oh, he shouldn't, but they're in the Holiday Bowl. Is that right? USC?
Yes.
Do I have that right? Okay. It was either that or the Sun Bowl. I remember joking they were going to be in the Sun Bowl, but I don't think that's where they ended up. But anyway, of course, I have a thing called the Internet and Como 4 Buttfucker and all that, right?
Right.
Anybody anybody that's laughing knows the reference, and anybody that's not laughing, they don't know what that reference or what the hell I'm talking about. But so, okay, they're playing Louisville in the Holiday Bowl.
Louisville in the Holiday Bowl, yeah, I just looked that up too. So,
which could be an interesting game, by the way, from a competitive standpoint. But
that'll be
45-42 or something. But
yeah, the non-defense.
Half-time start.
Maybe they could show videos of the Poland 1936 defense at halftime. Oh, I went there too soon.
Too soon. What the hell are we saying?
We're just talking about cowards that
complimenting Bo Nix. Oh yeah, and Caleb Williams. Oh, that's right. I was just going to finish by saying most people would probably disagree with me, but if you're Caleb Williams, you know, if I'm Caleb Williams, I want to be out there one last time with the guys, especially when he already left Oklahoma, so he's never really. He didn't go the full cycle, as it were, with his time at Oklahoma. He transfers to USC, and then he doesn't even finish the second season because it's a meaningless bowl game to him. I just don't like that, you know?
I don't either. I think it's cowardly. I do. It's disloyal and cowardly. Imagine this. It's like a bunch of us soldiers. Like, I'm going home in a couple of weeks. Oh, hey, we're going to go outside the wire and go on patrol. Ah, you guys go ahead. I'm going home in a couple of weeks. I can't risk another patrol. Fuck.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, okay, kind of different, but.
A little.
Oh, just a tad, but, you know, but I hear you.
Caleb Williams can't be thrown in Leavenworth for that, so you're right. But I mean,
there's no IUDs either at,
exactly my point, you pussy. Caleb Williams.
Tragic news tonight from San Diego. Caleb Williams, the young quarterback deemed to be a top five pick in next year's NFL draft, accidentally stepped on an IUD and Sam Murphy Stadium or whatever they I know it's not the Murph anymore, but what do they call it down there? Qualcomm or?
Yeah, I think so. I went down there for 2011, I think it was, when the Huskies were in the Holiday Bowl.
2010. Are you there?
Anyway. Yeah, I'm here. Did I lose you?
Oh, I didn't hear you for about 5 seconds.
Oh, I was taking a sip of coffee. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
But anyhow,
so you were there for the Nebraska game, right?
Yeah, it was great. I was like, that was actually a lot of fun. I was two rows back on the 50, and that was the game where good old what's his face Jake Locker got hit, and his helmet got flipped around, and he thought he was blind for like 10 seconds. That was pretty funny, actually.
That was the Oregon State game. That wasn't
You're right. Something else happened in that Holiday Bowl. What the fuck was that? What happened? Anyway, never mind.
Somehow we won. And then Sark was this.
It was like really low scoring too. What was it, like 10-6 or something? I don't remember.
No.
In the Holiday Bowl?
You'd think I would remember, but I don't.
In the Holiday Bowl, I know it was low scoring. Go ahead, I'll let you
This is riveting radio, isn't it?
I know.
You're more right than I am. The Huskies won 19-7.
That's that high? Score. Okay, my bad.
No, you're more right than I am.
Okay. Anyway, I remember it was low scoring, but it was fun, and it was great because it was over, you know, New Year's Eve and stuff. I had a lot of fun down there, but a lot of dog fans. But anyway, we digress. Do you mind a couple of quick subjects here concerning Husky football?
Oh, of course.
I would like to talk in particular about a couple of issues that I have. Number one, it's all over the boards. We don't need to get into the college football playoffs and the whole popularity contest of getting fucking Alabama in there. I'm sickened by that. But just to kind of on that theme, how the fuck did Odunze not win the Biletnikoff Award? How did that happen, Derek? Because
happens when you play in Seattle.
Exactly. And then you got Marvin Harrison, who, you know, at OSU, it was like, oh, he got robbed last year, so we got it. It's like, you know what that's like? It's like giving I don't know, like John Wayne the Oscar. Like, it's like, hey, you've been around, so here, we're going to give this to you for this movie, even though you're, I mean, I love John Wayne. I love the Duke, but we're going to give this to you as a Lifetime Achievement Award. That's what I feel like they gave to Marvin Harrison. It was like, you know, Odunze's stats, almost across the board. I think Marvin Harrison has 14 touchdowns and Odunze had 13. So that's the only stat where Marvin Harrison was superior. Odunze had like a couple hundred more yards and he had, God dang, I think like 15 more catches, if I remember right. I looked it up the other day. I don't get it.
Let me just say, yeah,
Odunze
sure.
is, just real quick and I'll shut up. Odunze is one of the most athletic football players I've ever seen in my life. It is amazing.
Oh, he's
like a trapeze artist and a wide receiver at the same time. The guy is so much fucking fun to watch. And he's one of the biggest reasons, of course, that they're undefeated and where they're at. So anyway, and, you know, Marvin Harrison played for an OSU team that did, you know, they're not exactly the undefeated team in the country either. So I'm just pissed. I'm just pissed about the whole thing. I think that's the biggest travesty from the award thing. Go ahead.
But the thing I want to add, just another layer to what you're saying there in terms of his value compared to Harrison, it's like Harrison also did not have playing alongside him two other guys that are arguably first round, second round picks.
True.
So it's not like, so you think back to the, I'm just picking this out of the blue, but the 86 Huskies where it was Chris Chandler throwing to Lonzel Hill. And yeah, we had Brian Slater and Daryl Franklin there, but those were a far drop off from Mo Hill, but Mo Hill was the guy. And, you know, I love Jalen Polk and, my God, how could I be forgetting number, Jalen McMillan?
I mean, yeah, McMillan, of course.
You know, under healthy, normal circumstances, those could be three first rounders. So it's like, so he had to share the ball a little bit there too. So it wasn't like he was just, what I'm trying to say is it wasn't like he was the only guy being targeted or whatever. And, and so the stats could have even been better, but, and if our defense had played better during the season and gotten off the field faster, then we might've had more possessions and all kinds of fun stuff that comes up from those type of hypotheticals that we don't deal in. Right. But you know,
yeah, this wasn't a Reggie Williams situation here. This was him
no,
surrounded
there you
by.
Go.
Yeah,
fantastic.
I mean, that's kind
example.
Of. Yeah, he's surrounded by monsters. And talk about gratifying. Watching McMillan be a monster in that first half against Oregon in the championship game. Oh God, and they emphasize it going to him again. That's coaching. Let's get this kid's head going, and you know you're the future, Bubba, and we love you, and we got you. I love that. I love that the game plan, Ryan Grubb, was like, no, we're going to get McMillan involved in a heavy way, and he fucking showed up. That was amazing to see. I was so happy to see that.
Wasn't it very early on they threw like a swing pass to him or something, just a real easy little six-yard gain or something just to get the rhythm going?
Yep, you're exactly right. That was exactly the tactic, and then he started just making catch after catch. I'm just so happy to see that. And that goes again to what you were saying, a great point that you made there, and I mean, that had crossed my mind a while back, but it's, I think that needs to be emphasized, is Odunze has, have you ever seen Odunze, like, even have a shred of anything other than enthusiasm and support for his teammates and just showing up like a fucking rabid dog? Hell no.
You don't see a DK Metcalf type of flare up or anything like that.
Fuck that guy.
Why are you throwing to me? Oh, there's Odunze and he's waving off the, you know, panic sarcastically because he didn't get thrown to on that play. Nothing like that ever.
Fuck no. DK Metcalf is the go away guy. But that's kind of my take on that. I think Odunze got robbed, and it's for those reasons, you know. No, because you can't defend it any other way. This was a court of law, we'd win. It'd be a mistrial.
jury's stacked these days with Notre Dame fans or Kirk Herbstreits or whatever, and you're just, you know.
Yeah, not to be political, but it'd be like, you know, all these judges and supposed juries and all of the Donald Trump charges. Anyway, we'll move along from that one.
Not to be political, but I'm going to be political.
Not to be political. You like that? I always like that when people say shit like that. It's like in the Army when people would come up to me and go, "With all due respect, sir," and I'm like, "All right, just stop right fucking there, because I guarantee you the next step out of your mouth is going to get you an Article 15 at best. So just rethink this whole thing, go away, and come back and figure this out." Anyhow, I'd like your thoughts on the Heisman, because I have a couple of thoughts on that.
Well, you know, if it's supposed to be a show pony type of thing, then, you know, you can't argue with Daniels winning it, I suppose. But to me, it's like, I honestly think that even if I was on the East Coast and I was voting on this thing and I wasn't a Husky fan, I would certainly think to myself, boy, that Arizona State game, you look terrible or whatever. But you'd look at the full body of work, you go 13-0. If you were to pick out Penix's top six plays on the year in terms of highlight reels, it matches up and stacks up against anybody's.
Absolutely.
So I don't think that he was like completely screwed, but I do feel like you got a team that lost three games and they really didn't. I'm not looking at LSU's schedule. I think they had like one big win or something like that. They were really a non-factor, and they played an FCS team, and they was able to bump up his stats in that sense. So I just feel like the overall body of work, plus it's not like Penix is some, boring accountant or something. The man's got charisma and flair on the field, so it's not like he was lacking in that department. So I think, maybe not looking very sharp coming down the stretch of the season, combined with the fact that he was in Seattle, and that's always going to be something that we're going to lag behind the rest of the nation when it comes to notoriety. Those were just not enough for him to get over the hump, but it's too bad, because if he had like lit up the Cougs for 482 yards or something, that might have been enough. You never know.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You made some good points, as always. How do you like them apples, me saying that?
There's people out there disagreeing with you, but go ahead.
Just a couple things I want to throw out there. LSU finished 9-3. They didn't even make it to their conference championship game. Strength of schedule, Washington was 8th, LSU was 14th. Okay, and I don't necessarily think, I'm not a Doug, and I'm pretty objective. I've spent my entire life looking at facts and reality and making decisions based on that and trying to keep assumptions down to feasible, necessary, and all that. But the thing to me is, I just kind of did a little philosophical exercise in my mind, and I said, what if the Huskies had gone 9-3, and our boy Penix had the exact same stats that Jaden McDaniel did, and LSU had went undefeated, and you swap stats? You know that Michael Penix would – you don't know. But my gut and absolutely tells me that Michael Penix would not have won the Heisman. Would not have won the Heisman at 9-3 with the same stats. And the reasoning would have been, well, LSU went undefeated, and Jaden McDaniel made all these, at the end of games, he showed up with key – passes and touchdowns and all that kind of thing, even if they wasn't playing. That is the bias to me. That's the built-in bias, and that's what pisses me off. I don't know that Michael Penix should have been the Heisman. You know, if the Heisman was awarded after game six, yeah, he's the Heisman winner going away. But you gotta take some of those variables into account and some of that nuance, and the fact that we would not be undefeated, obviously, with another quarterback, but even going into those fourth quarters and stuff like that, we would have lost, three out of the four games, that he managed to help pull us out at the very end, or throw a key pass or a key first down to keep the drive going, or, I fucking love the kid. He's a baller. I think when you throw a lot of these little nuances and variables into account, and the fact that he quarterbacked the undefeated and Pac-12 championship team. I don't know, man. I think, like I said, the unfairness to me, and, I don't necessarily like the word fair, but the bias to me is exactly what I said. Swap stats and swap records, and there's no fucking way that Michael Penix Jr. or swap stats, not records. There's no way Michael Penix Jr. wins the Heisman. No way.
I 99% agree with you there.
Yeah. I'm not 100% sold on the fact that he should have won it, but I just bull. Yeah, I'm just glad Caleb Williams wasn't a repeat because I really hate that guy. go paint your fucking toes. Yeah. Go listen to the Pesh Show and paint your toes, you fucking loser.
Go paint your fucking toes. Well, you know, I don't hate him. I hate the... In the same way that I really like Bo Nix, I hate all the blowing of him.
Right, right.
When it's way over the top.
I do too.
Me and Joey and Willie Doug were texting. Which game was it? Where I think it was the Pac-12 championship game. It was just Bo Nix, yes, Bo Nix, that, you know, and then like I won't, you know. What's the word I'm looking for? I won't re-legislate this, or there's another word. Litigate. That's the word. Legislate. I won't re-litigate. I won't re-litigate the whole thing again. Okay. But I'll just say very quickly. It'd be like Penix dropping back under pressure, rolls left, and he hits Odunze for 11 yards at a key first down. Let's look at what Bo Nix, how he reacted, and then the camera goes to Bo Nix, and it was like that over and over and over, And even at the very end of the game, when it was clear the Huskies were probably going to win, and Bo Nix is he's sitting on the folding chair, and he's leaning on his knees, and he's got the towel draped over his head because he obviously doesn't want anybody to see him when he's maybe crying. And but Kirk Herbstreit portrays that as him. He's visualizing the game-winning drive. We're looking at genius in action, you know? It was the most retarded – And I like Herbstreit. I just don't understand what all that was. Anyways.
Herbstreit's always blown the Oregon Ducks. He's always been there. But I like Kirby, too. Although Pat McAfee is my favorite guy on that show now by far and away. I love Pat. But
that's interesting. Okay.
I fucking love that guy. I love his obnoxious behavior on that show. But he definitely brings a different flavor to the show. The one thing I'll say about Bo Nix, it's interesting you said that. Oh, and I got one more quick topic. So if you're in a hurry, we can probably wrap this up. But I got one more just quick question for you before we go.
Another 20 minutes?
Oh, sure. Whatever. Yeah, I got time.
Okay, good. Yeah, please go ahead.
Oh, but I'm just going to wrap that up by saying you're right about the Caleb Williams hype and the Bo Nix hype, but Bo Nix seemed to handle it with so much more class and fucking adulthood than Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
Caleb Williams bought into his own fucking shit. He's kind of like he's kind of like the Neil deGrasse Tyson of fucking college football.
Oh, wow.
Bought into his own cult of personality, and now he's just become a fucking...
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
I fucking hate that guy.
Quarterbacks.
Yeah. I hate Neil deGrasse Tyson, but and I used to adore him, but yeah.
I don't hate him, but he's certainly... He's a guy that smells his own farts for sure. So,
absolutely, absolutely. Yes, he does. Look to the stars. But anyway.
Yeah, but you know, and him crying in the bosom of his mom was not a good look.
No, it was not. And at least Bo Nix had the class to not do something like that. But no, Bo Nix, he handled all that with, I think, with class. And, you know, if he was the Huskies quarterback, we would fucking worship the ground he walked on. I mean, so I look at it that way. It's like, what if he was mine, you know, and I try to examine it from an unbiased point of view from that way and go, oh no, fuck, if Bo Nix had been our quarterback for the last couple, yeah, I would have been happy. Anyway,
you know, the adulation that Jay Glocker gets to this day, and some people out there think that I hate Jay Glocker. I don't hate Jay Glocker. I think he's a nice person. I think he's a fine representative of the university. I don't think he was a Hall of Fame quarterback for the team.
Sure.
But the adulation that Jay Glocker gets is what Bo Nix is going to get in perpetuity from Oregon, but he deserves it.
Oh, I hear you. I think a lot of what Jake Locker gets is exactly what you said. I mean, good-looking, clean-cut kid who represented the university and was willing to come to the university at a very, very tough time. You know, Bo Nix, it was a pretty easy decision, but Jake Locker committed when we sucked. And, yeah, he was supposed to be the savior, and he wasn't. But, you know, he would have made a damn good NFL safety here, in my opinion.
Was that a tip of the cap to me, or was that your genuine thought?
No, that was a tip of the cap to you.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Oh, my. But
my final post on Dogman ever.
It's not inaccurate. It's inaccurate, but anyway. I did meet him one time, and it wasn't during a football thing. It was random. And couldn't have been any nicer. Couldn't have been any nicer of a guy. He's the guy that you saw in the media with the smile and everything else. So I didn't bug him for long.
Oh, I interviewed him one-on-one once. Yeah.
Oh, did you? Yeah,
you can find it under the byline of Chris Fetters.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I'd have to actually go back on Dugman and no, that's okay. I haven't been over there.
I'm sure the article is still there, but for anybody out there that doesn't know, I wrote for Dogman for 9 years, and then I think it was because when my Willingham book came out, then Kim Grunolds replaced my name with Chris Fetters for 9 years worth of articles that I wrote for Dogman. So, and guys like AZ Duck, who's a lawyer in real life and stuff, they were sending me private messages and telling me my options of what I should be doing. It'd be like, eh.
Well,
but anyways,
you can take solace in the fact that Kim lived being Kim for the rest of his life. So you can take solace in that fact.
Well, in all honesty, I don't want to turn this into a Dogman thing, but I would, I think the big surprise to me from my point of view is that, in my opinion, Kim hasn't ever learned any humility or any, he hasn't developed any maturity in that regard. He's just he's running the same thing even all these years later, and I don't hang out on their boards, but I know this from what people are quoting on Hardcore Husky from what happens over there or something. But you know, it's like, to me, you can't say they're completely irrelevant, but they're mostly irrelevant in my mind. It's just like, whatever, you know, they're not the go-to source for anything, and so it's just like, you know, God bless them, whatever. So
he's like a grape juice that drinks like a Merlot. So it's all good.
It's all good. But no, I interviewed Jake Locker once, and it was an off season thing. Toward the end of the interview, I started just asking a couple of offshoot questions and just trying to see if I could get something from a different angle. And I just remember I just asked him, like, I said, well, by the way, tell me, like, over the last few years, like, what's your favorite book you've read? And he went, book?
Mongo no like book.
I don't mean that he was, like, stupid or whatever, but he's like, I don't really read books. You know? Oh, okay.
The book
of
love.
He would have said, Treasure Island when I was 12 or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I just got done with Mice and Men for the fourth time, and I found the nuances between Lenny and George's relationship. I read Elegant Universe by Dr. Brian Greene, and I found it fascinating how the five fundamental forces of nature are so incongruently balanced.
Oh, Jake, anyway. Please continue.
Mongo, eat now.
No, but he wasn't like that either. Anybody listening to this that's a Husky fan knows what he's about, so that he's not some mongoloid.
No, he's not at all. He was very, very, very bright in a lot of ways when I talked to him, and very, very friendly and articulate. So, yeah, no, he's not that guy.
And you know what? He was a great safety, and he himself said that in August of his senior year. He said that to somebody from the Seattle Times. That's the fucking truth. And Kim Colonel said that I was agitating the readers of Dogman, and I needed to stop it. Like Jake Locker said it himself.
Pussy. I'm sorry. I'm
so anyways.
Let's
look toward Texas. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Fuck Texas. How do you feel about Brown Sox's latest success in the NFL? You've been hearing, I know you're not an NFL fan, but you've been hearing about anything? Anything about that?
I've seen little comments on the boards that, he didn't shit his pants on that play or whatever, but I don't know any specific details other than he's been starting.
Yeah, he won an overtime. Oh, shit. I don't remember because I'm not NFL. I saw some stuff, and so I looked it up. His stat line has been actually quite good. Overtime game, and then they won handily, I think, 34-17 in their last game, and he's getting all this press. And I'm a YouTube junkie when I'm working or writing for my class or doing any of that stuff. I always have YouTube going on the big screen in the background, usually political stuff or whatever, podcasts that I'm listening to. And I was scrolling, I don't know, when was it, day before yesterday or something like that, and there was literally like four sports podcasts that were about Jake Browning popping up. Where did
listen
he come from?
That.
Yeah. He
got never.
His mentorship from Chris Peterson, you know, and he led the Huskies to their first ever college football playoff back in, you know, and he did. I mean, it's true. It's really interesting. He's getting, like, big-time national attention from, like, the last two games that they won. It's kind of interesting. And he did play really well. I
32 out of 37 for 354 yards and a touchdown against Jacksonville on the road.
Right.
And then
right.
8 of 24 for 275 and two TDs with a pick to beat Indianapolis. That's good for him. Good for him.
That is not shitty.
No. And it doesn't say, you know, four carries for minus 48 yards either or something.
Changed his socks three times at halftime.
But, you know, that 28-yard stack against Stanford and stuff, it's just and then the arrogance on the sideline. I just, you know, but God bless him. And this is great. You know, he's got 924 yards and five TDs and the team's 7-6. So,
God bless him
and good luck.
I will always care about him because he was the quarterback that got us back into relevance. I don't consider us relevant under Steve Sarkisian. He got us to mediocrity, and then we went to good under Peterson, and now we might be great, which would be fantastic. This year we certainly are, but we're talking long run here. But no, I will thank him for that. I'm still embarrassed to this very day, and I'll throw myself under the fucking crushing wheels of the hardcore Husky Freightliner motherfucking 3 goddamn mile long Burlington Northern train and say, I did tell you that he was going to be the next Mark Brunell. I did say
you and I had a mild argument about that for a hot minute.
I did say that his sophomore year. I said it. It's literally one of five times in my life that I've been wrong, really wrong, and that was it right there.
My head was already a different space in terms of Husky football. At that
right.
point, so I wasn't like a rabid fan in any event. But when he graduated and left, I was not unhappy, you know, about that. So.
I was not either. I was not either. I thought Keith Price was going to be the one lead us to the promised land. I'm kidding. No, I did not think that. So,
you know what? People say, not everybody, but people have said that Sarkisian brought out the best in Price or helped him. I think that like if Price had played for DeBoer, he would have been 50% better. So
I think so too. He would have been like Michael Penix. I mean, they're kind of like, you know, tall, skinny black dudes. So, I mean, they got that going for him.
Well, I don't know if he would have been Penix, but, you know, he would have been better than he was under Stark.
Absolutely.
The QB guru. As we conclude, then, what do you think of looking ahead there? I view the Huskies as – I think the Huskies will win by 3 or 4. It'll be just like any other game this year.
Yeah, none of the pundits are picking the Huskies, which is amazing. You'd think people would learn by now that these guys are tough and they're not going to back off and they're going to play to the last down. And I know those are cliches, but it's true. It's actually a team that's true about. I think a lot of the folks on the boards are correct. You know, if this had been a Chris Peterson team – we'd be 9-3 probably at best. As much as I
agreed.
Have a boner I had a boner. I mean, I still remember the meme that I put out that got a lot of derision and popularity, where in the meat locker with Rocky, except it was Peterson's head pounding the sides of beef, and it says, "I beat my meat for Pete."
I don't remember that. Wow.
I'll send it to you when we get off. You'll get a laugh.
Weren't you the one that created the meme of Peterson as the General Sherman's burning Atlanta, to the Sea, and all that? Wasn't that you that did that?
That was me. DNC used that as his avatar there.
Yeah, and it went a little viral. So
it went very viral to the point where I don't know if you remember the story, but I actually got I guess because I put it out on social media and said, ha 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 ha. And I got a message offline that Auburn had complained to the University of Washington about it. That's notoriety there, baby. That's notorious right there. I'm very proud. That's infamy at its best, but a day that will live in infamy. That was awesome. But yeah, that went very viral. It was showing up on people's Facebook pages that I had no idea about and stuff like that. What the fuck were you saying? I got all twisted there. We'd be 9-3 under
Peterson. Get a semi boner for Peterson, and
but we would be realistically, we'd be 9-3 at best under Peterson this year, I think.
At best, and he'd be all burned out again.
And he wouldn't smile. He wouldn't allow the return. Yeah. I was so excited when they hired him, and then I was just like, okay, 2016 was a very, very good year. And then it was just like, wah, wah. But, I was kind of surprised when I was at the Huskies game recently that they had him up on the for Veterans Day, which I told you they did a wonderful job at UW. I was really pleasantly surprised. They had him up on the Jumbotron several times talking about stuff, which I was like, huh, that's interesting. And then the motivational video that they're showing for the Pac-12 championship, he's talking about we have a chance to be great and all that stuff. I'm like, why didn't they get him on the video? I mean, I don't hate him. Don't get me wrong. I don't hate Chris Peterson.
No, I don't hate him.
No, not at all.
My whole thing, though, is just like he burned out and he quit. Okay, that's no crime. But
no,
now his whole thing is, drinking, sipping fancy coffee and then mentoring youngsters. And it's like, okay, but you quit. You quit on your team.
Right, right. No,
And you're so burned out, you didn't go seek another job. So he's just like, I don't know what he's technically, if he's like a mentor at the Foster School of Business, or I don't know what's going on technically right now, but. Mentoring about what?
imagine if I was on a tour overseas and about 9 months in, I went, I can't take it anymore. And I take a Section 8 to go home, back to the stateside. And then they bring me back over, a few months later to give pep talks and war cries to the unit.
Kind of. Not that we're implying that he's a big pussy or anything like that. Not, where he's
no, I'm not at all. Whatever,
but,
whatever.
No, I know you're not.
Mental reasons he had, I valid, and God bless him. I don't have any grudges, but I just mean the situation and all
I
of
mean,
that.
I mean, do you want to be? And I say lectured in a good way. Do you want to be lectured and mentored by Muhammad Ali or Jerry Cooney? You know what I mean? Right?
Jerry Cooney
might be a good guy and interesting to talk to in the pride of Ireland or whatever, but he didn't win a championship.
Oh, I'm laughing so hard you made me snort. Jerry Cooney, what a good deep dive there. I love it. I was so disappointed.
Guys like
him.
Fudgy probably doesn't know who that even is or whatever, if Fudgy's listening still, but.
Right. God bless Jerry Cooney. I was a big fan of his, thinking he was going to be the deal. It didn't work out.
Oh, were you really?
That was the second out of 5 times that I've been wrong, except I was a little kid, so that doesn't count.
Well, I mean, how old was I? I think I was 11 when he fought Larry Holmes, and I liked Holmes, but I didn't love Holmes, but I was rooting for Larry Holmes. But
yeah, no, I was a Cooney guy, and not out of racism, everybody. Fuck off.
cue the Dixie music. Okay.
They're the only sports poster I have up on my wall, other than vintage Husky programs that are blown up, is of Muhammad Ali in the versus Sonny Liston, where he's standing over Sonny Liston and looking down on him derisively. That's my favorite sports photograph of all time, and it is prominent on my wall. I'm staring at it right now. So.
Was he Cassius Clay at that point, or was he Muhammad Ali then?
Muhammad Ali, yeah. He might be my favorite athlete of all time, to be quite honest with you.
Even more so than Napoleon Kaufman?
Definitely more so than Greg Lewis when he told me he was going to bitch slap me on Dogman years ago.
He got it so like, with you and Race Bannon.
I'm like, bring it, Greg. I'll just punch you in your fucking knee. The one you left out on the turf of Husky Stadium that you've mentioned 900 times.
Yeah, you know what? He could have been a really good pro back.
Yeah. No, we got in a fight over Willingham at probably. Lorenzo Romar. I take that back. It was Lorenzo Romar.
Oh. Well, he got into it with Race Bannon over Willingham publicly, and then privately he and I had a brief email exchange where he did not appreciate my criticism of Willingham at one particular point, but
oh my god, boy, he's been wrong a lot.
Well, at least in that realm, yeah, you know. But yeah. You know, I want to also, when he was the president of the Big W Club, Greg was very, very helpful and went way out of his way to help me many times when I was either trying to seek out interviews or I was looking for guys trying to write a book or something. Couldn't have been more helpful.
I don't take it personally. He had views. He was defending his guys, so it is what it is, you know.
And I remember, though, I was talking to who was that guy, and he actually has passed away since then. He was number 86 in 1986. He was a tight end. He was either 86 or 84.
86.
Tight end in 1986. And then he ended up working in the administrative offices of the athletic department at Washington. Why am I forgetting?
I don't know. I have my Husky history book. It's not up here. It's packed away. Anyway.
Go again with riveting radio, but.
Riveting Husky.
Bear with me, folks. We're wrapping up anyways, but Rod Jones.
Okay.
Rod Jones.
Okay.
He's dead now, but.
Yeah.
But I just remember I was talking to him. It wasn't an interview or anything. We were shooting the bull. And it was right when Willingham got hired, and he said that he was, like, walking across this thing, and he looked over, and he saw Willingham walking across campus, and he was saying, and I'm not making fun of Rod here, I'm just saying that this was the narrative. And just the rigid posture with which Willingham was walking as he marched across campus, and he said, "We've got another Don James here." And I've just thought about that. But you talk about buying into a narrative. It's the same way that people bought into narratives about Sark being the quarterback whisperer and all this shit, you know. It's like, if anything, he kind of ruined Jake Locker, because if you were a great quarterback coach, you would take what Jake Locker was intangibly good at and you would develop that instead of trying to turn him into, you know, Troy Aikman or whatever.
Yeah.
And he wasn't Troy Aikman. He wasn't somebody that was going to be a statue in the pocket and scan the field and throw lasers.
No.
That's not who he was.
Let him be fucking Tim Tebow. I mean, come on.
So, yeah, you know, and that I feel like I'm rehashing old wounds or something, but the 2010 season could have been 9-3 or something instead of what it was, you know, 9-4, 10-3 instead of 7-6.
Right. No.
Anyway, that's my thought.
That's okay. For those of you bored to death, you got two OGs from Hardcore Husky talking here, so this stuff is that's just gonna happen.
Well, anyways, good chat with you, man. And we're gonna
I'm gonna officially change the handle over to the Sweatpants General, so, because you know, the new era Husky football, get rid of the old Coop Dog OG handle. So I'll be doing that here in a little bit.
Oh, okay. Sounds good. Hey, good talking with you as always, and we'll talk soon.
All right, my friend. Talk soon. All right. Go Dogs.
Go Dogs. See you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Hardcore Husky Podcast. This show is copyrighted material. In other words, stop plagiarizing our shit, fuckos. So please tell a friend and rate us 5 stars on iTunes, especially you cheap bastards who don't donate. It's the least you could do. Yeah, I'm looking at you, creepy coog. And come join our fun over at hardcorehusky.com. We've got Husky Football, Yellow Snow's Record Shop, and our notorious Tug Tavern, which is a shit show of politics and strange news. And if you enjoy yourself and are ready for the next level of cyber
peyote,
come join Swain's Wigwam. I'm going to have to read this over.
Sway's Wigwam, yeah.
Sway's Wigwam at Navajo Nation's Gift to College Football. It's also the official private club of Hardcore Huskies. We're talking boobs, guns, and inside information, all for the low fee of $129 a year. Come join the fun. I have to redo that one, but...